Hello, Rock and Roll Rebels, and welcome to another episode of Ramble On with Rosie. This is your host, Rosie, and we are here to discuss the GOAT. I do not mean Tom Brady, nor do I mean the four-legged animal. I mean the greatest of all time, in reference to music, specifically the greatest song of all time. Now, asterisk, side note, footnote, whatever you want to call it here, I realize everyone has their own unique and distinctive opinion on what qualifies as great. But this song has made almost every list of greatest songs of all time that had more than like 20 things on the list that I know of. Like, it is. You bring up Born to Run, which is this week's topic, to anybody, and even if they're not a Springsteen fan, they will still acknowledge the greatness of this song because this song supersedes Springsteen himself. It's bigger than The Boss. It is a vital song to just the tapestry of, what America looks like and what it looked like in the early 70s and mid 70s really. And just to a certain feeling and vibe and everything. It's very unique. Bruce never did another song like Born to Run, and he had never done one before. Like, there's other Bruce songs where you're like, oh, this one sounds like that one, like Thundercrack and the E Street Shuffle have some similarities, and you can catch those things where it's like, yeah, they was like working on the same theme here. And while the theme of Born to Run will be revisited in like individual chunks extracted and expanded on, musically and lyrically, Bruce never quite did a song like Born to Run again, because it was this great middle stepping piece between the sort of, I'm not calling him the new Dylan, but the Dylan-esque rambling of Greetings from Asbury Park and The Wild and the Innocent and E Street Shuffle, and the very stripped down grittiness that you would get on Darkness on the Edge of Town. It's halfway between those two, but it's a very complete song, so it is a more complete picture of life than what's offered on either of those albums, really. It's legendary. I mean, this song, if Bruce had done no other song, he'd still be remembered and revered because of how wholly unique and great Born to Run is. And I'm not even talking about the album, which is one hell of an album. It's a great one. It's full of really good songs. Some of which are like 8 minutes long. Born to Run happens to cover like almost the entire range of human emotion in about 5 minutes. I think it's less than 5 minutes long. It's like 4.5 minutes long. So it's just a little long to be like, the ideal single length. But it still covers everything that there is to be experienced in life almost. But we'll get to the lyrical content in a minute. I want to talk a bit about the backstory of the song because it took a while to come into being. Bruce started, like, did the first demo in January of 74, and then, like, the final or one of the he started recording it in August of 74, so that's 8 months right there of working on the same song. And then, even after it was recorded, it was another year. In August of 75 is when the single came out and the album came out. Granted, some DJs in the Northeast got a hold of a different mix before the final mix for the album was around. Mike Appel gave some of the DJs a earlier mix, and they played it in, pretty good rotation on the Northeastern radio stations. In fact, I want to say it was Kid Leo started playing it every Friday at 5:55. I'm like, what a way to start the weekend. Like, I don't know about y'all, but Born to Run makes me run over the speed limit by at least 5, more like 15. I'll just be driving along. I'm like, oh, I'm going 90. That's new. Didn't mean to be doing that. So it's a speed trap song to be sure, but I mean, how could it not be? Both lyrically and musically, it is so automotive based. So it's just made for driving and driving at high speeds. Which we'll get to some of the automotive influence of this song in a minute, but for right now, I just found this out when I was researching this, but apparently Bruce was not the first person to record his own song. Mike Appel gave, like, a early version of it or something, the demo, I guess, to, what is this? Sorry. Alan Clark. He was the, one of the founding members of the Hollies, and their original lead vocalist, and co-wrote some of their, you know, big hits like Carrie Ann and, like, Bus Stop or Carousel. I'm trying to remember. I had the list earlier, and there was the one I was like, oh, I forgot I knew that song, but now I've forgotten all of them. Anyways, lead singer and songwriter and founder in the Hollies. Actually recorded it for a solo album, but then there was like a strike, and so his version, while recorded, didn't get released until after Bruce's, which is a good thing, because, you know, you're not going to compete with Bruce's version, and I'm glad this one wasn't out floating around to be a distraction, because it's not bad. I mean, he sings Born to Run better than I did at karaoke last night, but that's not saying a whole lot either. It just does not have the conviction that Bruce brings to the song, even though the arrangement is fairly similar. Though I gotta tell you, whoever's playing saxophone is no Clarence Clemons, and it shows. Not that they're bad. They're just the same way, you know, Alan Clark, and I'm not just saying this because I'm biased towards the Bruce version, but really, no one other than Bruce can do this song with the proper amount of conviction, because he's just got that gut level grit to his voice. It's like I was looking at a Pink Cadillac Music on Instagram. That's a page, I think it's based out of Italy, for fans of Bruce. And they described Bruce's voice as a tractor trailer full of gravel. And I'm like, that's a pretty accurate description of Bruce's voice, honestly. They were saying it in reference to his vocal contributions to We Are the World, which just had like its 40th anniversary or something this past week. But I was like, that's still a really good description of Bruce's voice. The tractor trailer full of gravel. Just everything that is Bruce is sort of summed up in that sentence describing his voice. It's perfect. So, and Alan Clark does not have a tractor trailer full of gravel kind of voice. I mean, most of us know the Hollies. They don't really have that gritty feel. And honestly, Born to Run is such a quintessentially American song that you really need to be American to sing it. And I'm not one of those people who says, like, you know, you have to be relate to it, because, I mean, I love Roger Taylor's version of Bruce Springsteen's Racing the Street. I possibly love it even more than Bruce's. But, you know, and that's a British dude from a glam rock band, you know, singing a Bruce Springsteen song and doing a great job, but Alan Clark sadly does not do a great job. But, you know, fortunately, Bruce's version is the definitive one. It's not like Blinded by the Light, where Manfred Mann owns the recognition plate. No one even hardly knows that Alan Clark covered this song. I didn't till this week. But it's just, It's his vocals are so good for the song, and then the arrangement is, it's probably one of my favorite arrangements of any song ever. It's just powerful, but not overly done. It's like one music critic said, Born to Run is the fulfillment of everything Be My Baby was about and lots more, which is like sort of noting the influence that Phil Spector's Wall of Sound had on Bruce, but also acknowledging that Born to Run is way more than just some imitation of Phil Spector's arranging. It is its own creature. It is entirely unique. It is, Well, fantastic. I can't come up with enough adjectives to describe how great Born to Run is. It sort of is bigger than words. It's bigger than Bruce. It's, its own entity, pretty much. And getting back to that automotive illusion I mentioned earlier, the song is paced like a car ride. I'm not sure if other people have noticed this. I told my best friend Ashley about this, and she like blinked at me blankly, and I'm like, "Did you not catch on to that vibe?" Because I caught that vibe, because like it totally starts, it just embodies the spirit and essence of a muscle car from like the beginning, and like that you have the strong chords and the sort of hum of guitar that Bruce sings about Hemi-powered drones over, and it kind of drones like a cruising, car engine, and then you're like, as you're riding with the windows down, you get Clarence's saxophone solo, which feels like the wind blowing your hair back, in musical form. Like, it's just, I don't know how Bruce, what sorcery he used, I don't know how he got a song to sound like a car without using any sort of car sounds in the song. There's no beep beep and beep beep, yeah, like the Beatles. Strictly just normal music, normal singing, and yet the song sounds exactly like a car ride. Because you, after you get past Bruce's, I mean, Clarence's solo, you kind of slow down, and you've got that deceleration to like the stoplight, and then it just floors it at the 1, 2, 3, 4, and the highway's jammed with broken heroes. And then just power drives you off into the sunset, with this just fantastic arrangement. Like, it feels like a car ride, especially that slowdown, and then flooring it at 1, 2, 3, 4, and the highway's jammed with broken heroes. It sounds so much like a car ride, it's ridiculous, and I don't know how Bruce did it. It's probably one of the greatest accomplishments of his musical career. I mean, obviously some credit has to go to the producers and stuff, but Bruce was pretty heavily involved in the recording and arranging of his own songs. So I don't know how they did it, I guess, but God bless them for doing it, because it stands as a monument of just fantastic arrangement and production. Like I said, even if Bruce had never done another song, this song would put him up there as a legendary, musician. Just, it'd have been a one-hit wonder kind of thing. Even though it wasn't that much of a hit, it only like it peaked at like number 22 on Billboard, so it didn't even break like the top five or anything. In fact, Bruce only has one song recorded by himself that has broken the top five. And that's Hungry Heart. And I'm like, really? That's not even the best song off the river. But that's beside the point. That is a ramble for another day. Or at least a rant, because I'm like, Hungry Heart's not that good of a song. It's not bad, but it's not that good. As Bruce songs go, he has much better songs. And somehow Hungry Heart became a hit. But that aside, I will not go down that rabbit hole. But in fact, Billboard magazine described the arrangement and the overall vibe of the song as a where's it? Monster song with a pile driver arrangement. And I'm like, pile drivers, gravel, maybe working on a highway was more autobiographical than Bruce realized, because he keeps getting compared to construction. Gravel pile drivers. I'm sure there's some other construction worker comparisons that have been drawn on Bruce throughout his career. But anyways, getting to the lyrics of the song, which is where like the heart and soul of a phenomenally arranged and produced and, faultlessly musically executed song exists, just is with the lyrics, because the lyrics are another layer of what makes it so unique. Like, nobody else writes songs like this. And this song, even inside of Bruce's, discography, is different. Like, he's got other songs that discuss some of these topics, But never quite does he discuss everything so completely. It's like I mentioned earlier, it's like this bridge between the sort of poetic rambling of the first two albums and then the stark working class hero life of the rest of his musical career, which Bruce actually sort of addresses this. He has a quote in his book, which I think it's like Bruce Springsteen in His Own Words. I can't remember what it is. It's basically got all the lyrics of the songs and some commentary. Oh yeah, it's just Bruce Springsteen songs. That's why it was hard to remember. It's so simple. But the quote is, "As a songwriter, I always felt one of my jobs was to face the questions that evolve out of my music and search the answers as best I could. For me, the primary questions I'd be writing about for the rest of my work life first took form in the songs on Born to Run. So questions like, I want to know if love is real. It was an album where I left behind my adolescent definitions of love and freedom." Which, like I said, it bridges that gap between point A and point B, between the wild and the innocent, and Darkness on the Edge of Town, which is a pretty big gap. You're going from the E Street Shuffle to Prove It All Night. There's a lot of growth between there. But to the lyrics of Born to Run, and I'm going to kind of like go through the song and break down the segments of the lyrics and maybe talk about it as a whole. So, like, starting with, it opens with, "In the day we sweated out on the streets of a runaway American dream," which kind of, that part reminds me of Bruce's confession that when people asked him about Thunder Road, which is probably the closest song Bruce Springsteen has to Born to Run, and it also has an automotive vibe to it, too. They're like, Thunder Road's like Born to Run's little sister. But he was asked, you know, by people, like, how can you write a line like you're scared and you're not thinking we're maybe not that young anymore in Thunder Road when you're only 24? And he's like, it's post-Vietnam. It's post-Watergate. Nobody feels young in America anymore. We're all kind of already disillusioned. So it wasn't that hard to sound like the embittered old soul, even though he hadn't broke 25 yet. And that, like, the runaway American dream is sort of it. It's like you're realizing the wheels have come off of what your, you know, World War II era parents taught you the world and your country looked like. It's like, okay, this isn't as stable as we thought it was. It's like Bruce Springsteen brings up in his book Songs yet again, where he talks about, you know, they're facing an oil shortage. Things like that. So maybe Watergate hadn't happened yet. I don't remember what year Nixon got impeached. I just know it happened in the 70s. It was a little bit before my time. But, you know, point is, the American dream is slowly crumbling. And, you know, the gilding is being washed off. And like Bruce says in his books, you know, they were realizing, you know, resources are finite and things like that. You know, gas crisis and all those lovely things are going on. And it's like, okay, maybe we can't go cruising in our wonderful muscle cars that I love for infinity and beyond. And then it's like, he moves on and the next line is, "At night we ride through mansions of glory," which sounds, you know, wonderful and amazing, but it's counterpoised in suicide machines. Like, it's not just like in fast muscle cars, you know, a positive. Suicide machine is not a wholly positive description of the American automobile, even though it is occasionally an accurate one. Or in this case, I always feel like Born to Run is happening on a motorcycle, probably because the later lines about the strap your hands, cross my engines, totally not euphemistic, but it's got, yeah, so the motorcycle thing. So in this case, it's a Harley Davidson, not an American muscle car, but close enough. The vibe is the same. And then sprung from cages on Highway 9, like, none of the old big band World War II era songs talked about cages. They didn't discuss the, you know, wear and tear of living on any sort of like deep emotional level. It'd be like, oh, somebody left me and they broke my heart, rather than life is slowly sucking the life out of me kind of feeling. Depression and those sorts of things didn't really get covered in your pop songs, but not the Born to Run's exactly a pop song. but it's kind of there. You have to go to the blues if you want to find somebody being depressed prior to rock and roll. But yeah, so, and then the chrome wheel, fuel injected, and stepping out over the line, it's obviously pulling you back into the automotive vibe that the whole song has, both on a lyrical and, as we discussed, arrangement level. And, you know, you've got Baby the Town Rips the Bones from Your Back. It's a death trap. It's a suicide rap. Yet again, not like everything's trippy and roses, but also the song isn't depressing either. Like, not just because the arrangement. Lyrically, it does have sparks of hope, which definitely makes it, like, the precursor to what Darkness on the Edge of Town is. Because Darkness on the Edge of Town, and pretty much every Bruce Springsteen project, other than the really stripped-down stuff like Nebraska and Ghost of Tom Joad albums, almost all the songs, no matter how bad the situation is, there's always, like, tinges of hope in the song. Bruce is a master at working hope into some of the most depressing songs, you know, or depressing situations possible. He's really good at that. And it starts in Born to Run. Because prior to Born to Run, he's not really doing a whole lot of discussion of, like, deep issues. After Born to Run, that's pretty much all he'll be doing for his musical career. I mean, let's face it, as much as I love the E Street Shuffle, it's not that deep of a song. It's a fun song, though. And it's a great song, and it's really unique. But, yeah, yet again, another song for another time. Tramps Like Us, Baby We Were Born to Run, which, incidentally, I was realizing this while I was looking at my book of song lyrics by Bruce. He's really sparse on putting choruses in his songs. I found this out when I did a painting with a quote from Thunder Road, and then I decided on the edges of the canvas I was going to write with a Sharpie marker, you know, on the, like, 2 inches of edge on the canvas, the entire lyrics to Thunder Road, and then I ran out of space very quickly because I was going to just leave out the chorus, and I'm like, there is no chorus. Oh boy. Let's fit 5 minutes of song lyrics on the 2-inch edge of a canvas. Yeah, so, and Born to Run the same way. There's no chorus, really. There's a little bit of a refrain with Tramps Like Us, Baby We Were Born to Run, but there's no real chorus to this song. And then we get to Wendy, Let Me In, I Want to Be Your Friend, I Want to Guard Your Dreams and Visions, which this is where we get to Born to Run being the greatest love song of all time. Because Bruce is doing that thing that he does so well, where he acknowledges, like, the insecurities and the desires that women actually have. They're not just pretty porcelain dolls sitting on their porch. They have depth and depression and dimensions that so many pop songs and rock songs do not give them. And he's over here be like, pleading for her to, you know, be vulnerable enough to let him in. Which means he's stepping out in vulnerability, which is really attractive in a guy. Because it's like, oh, okay, if you're okay with being vulnerable with me, then maybe I'll be okay sharing my, you know, heart desires with you. And things will go well. And then you get, you know, with Guard Your Dreams and Visions. I'm like, most songs don't even acknowledge the women have dreams and visions. And I'm like, Bruce, how did you have unlocked the secrets of life? Go do TED Talks around the country and educate other young men, because this is the stuff right here. Also, side note here, Wendy is pretty much 100% verified to be inspired by, the name at least, inspired by Peter Pan's Wendy, which Bruce had a poster of Peter Pan hanging over his bed at this time. So, you know, it works, and it's cute, and it kind of fits, you know, this bridge between adolescence and adult struggles that Born to Run, the song, is. Because it, like, it bridges that gap. Because, in a way, the first two albums are, like, the adolescent struggle, and then Darkness on the Edge of Town is definitely all adult struggle. And Born to Run is in the middle of those. Sort of bridging the two together, kind of like Bruce said in his quote. So, Wendy and Peter Pan sort of make a good reference here. So it's the New Jersey Neverland on Highway 9. But and then the next two lines were like, when I was a kid, I was like, that doesn't sound wholly kosher, but huh. I was like 12, you know, you're coming of age, and you hear a line like, just wrap your legs around these velvet rims and strap your hands across my engines. You're like, that sounds like something naughty, but I'm not totally sure because I'm 12. One of those small light bulb moments of adolescence, courtesy of Bruce Springsteen. And it's such a great line because Bruce does this in a few of his songs. It's another knack he has in his songwriting, where he can say things and he perfectly bridges that gap between being, you know, really innocent pop music of the 60s discussion of, you know, romance and sexual feelings and the vulgar, like, too explicit to the point it's not sexy discussion of sexual themes that, like, well, most of modern music does. Hence why most of my, I'm like, this is not even sexy anymore. What are y'all doing? This is just sort of trashy. There's no appeal here. Whereas you throw in some detailed descriptive line like velvet rims and hands cross engines, and you're like, well then, that has appeal. So, like, Bruce bridges that, he's got one foot on the classy side of the saddle, and the other foot is over on the, you know, tawdry side, and, you know, he straddles it better than a motorcycle. It's the perfect mixture of just enough, just a hint of enough of the sexy to make it sexy. Where it's not a wholly, you know, halo 60s pop song, you know, that you'd have to run over with a magnifying glass to figure out if there's any sexual tension in this relationship, you know. And it's not the tawdry side. It's great. I love it. He's got a great knack for doing that in his songs. Bruce doesn't really have. Okay, he has two songs that are explicit sexually. One of those is Redheaded Woman, which he never recorded, and the other one is about the prostitute on, like, Devils and Dust or Ghost of Tom Joad. It's like, I think it's called Reno or something. But other than those two, he pretty much never writes fully, definitely sexual explicit lines. He just couches things in euphemisms and metaphors, like in Pink Cadillac or Ramrod or all those other fun automobile euphemistic songs, Born to Run kind of being the first of many. But moving on from that part, you get to Together We Could Break This Trap, We'll Run Till We Drop, Baby We'll Never Go Back, which is some of the hopeful themes I was talking about. Like, you get the essence and the idea of hopefulness there, you know, like they're gonna go chase their dreams. Hopefully they'll find them. And then another one of those great, deeply romantic lines that make Born to Run such a great love song. I like fast music, so I'm always gonna like the faster love songs anyways. The exception being Bruce Springsteen's The Way, because it's a really nice slow song. But anyways, you get Will You Walk With Me Out on the Wire, because baby, I'm just a scared and lonely rider, but I gotta know how it feels. I wanna know if your love is wild. I wanna know if love is real. Which just, whew, holy cow. Like, the amount of astonishing vulnerability. Like, here's the manly man with the muscle car or the motorcycle. So he's like everything you think of when you think of, like, the American male. But he's over here being completely upfront about his feelings, admitting he is scared, admitting he is unsure if love is real, but he is willing to give it a shot because he likes this chick that much. I'm like, where is this and where can I find it? Because holy cow. Like, Bruce Springsteen is a master songwriter and writes great love songs, and Born to Run is one of the best. Not just of Springsteen's discography, but of the entire history of recorded music. Because it has that depth to it. It's not just, oh, I want to hold your hand. No offense to the Beatles. And I love I Want to Hold Your Hand. It's one of my favorite Beatles songs. But there's not a lot of depth there. There's not a lot of vulnerability. There's not a lot of that grit and glue that consists of actual life and relationships and the messiness of living. It's very clean, very, you know, everything is sunshine and roses, which is nice, but life is definitely not sunshine and roses all the time. Things will suck. It's inevitable. So Bruce acknowledges all that. He acknowledges his own loneliness. You know, but he also is, like, giving her the offer and the invitation of, will you walk with me out on the wire? Like, hey, I'm scared. You're scared. But I think this is worth the risk. Which, I mean, I feel like there's no more honest way to declare your love for somebody than that. Because that's the truth of life. Life and living in love and all that is scary. But hopefully, you know, relationships are out there and exist and people find them where the other person's okay with letting down their walls and both people do that and they have a healthy relationship. And I'm like, Bruce, your songs give me hope for so many reasons. And then you get, you know, Beyond the Palace, Hemi-powered drones scream down the boulevard. So yet again, back with the car analogy and a low-key Jersey reference with the palace. And then you get, these lines actually came up in a book. I read a book called Captivating, which is really, really good, sort of about, you know, like, feminine identity and spiritual stuff. And anyways, really good book that was really impactful for me. And they literally quoted this line in it as sort of an example of the, you know, feminine and masculine dynamics where, like, the girls comb their hair in the rearview mirrors and the boys try to look so hard. Because girls, you know, as a general rule, want to know that we are admired. And so, you know, that is lovelily illustrated in the we comb our hair in the rearview mirror. Which I feel like every woman has used a rearview mirror to fix her hair or her makeup at some point. I have 100% used the rearview mirror on my own car to fix my lipstick, more so than the one on my visor even. So, accurate description. And then, you know, the guys try to look so hard. It's the posturing to, like, make sure you look manly. And, you know, which is a big thing for guys, especially during adolescence. Same way it's a big concern of us, you know, females about what we look like, you know, throughout our whole lives, especially when you're an adolescent, though. You're like, oh my gosh, everybody else has straight hair, and I have curly hair, and I need my hair straightener, because I look weird, and I have to fit in, and, you know, this, and that, and the other, and all the, you know, my clothes are this, and that, and the other, and all the posturing that goes on in your adolescent years, and continues on at various levels into adulthood. And Bruce sort of covers that, and that's, you know, the example. That's why the book I was reading used that line as an example of the sort of male and female dynamics. And Bruce is covering it in, you know, two lines. And then the amusement park rises bold and stark, which honestly, while I knew all the lyrics to Born to Run, that was the one I could never make out. Like, I could sing the rest of the song, but I'm like, the blah, 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 blah. I was like, I don't know what that line is. So I finally read it. I was like, oh, so that's what he's saying. Amusement park rises bold and stark. Kids are huddled on the beach in the mist, which is a really good description. And also, if you read Bruce Springsteen's autobiography, Born to Run, it's totally, you know, you can totally get where that came from, because he did a lot of hanging out on the beach and surfing and hitchhiking to the beach. Like, Bruce was a beach bum, more or less, in his adolescence. And then you get another deeply romantic, passionate line of why I want to die with you out on the streets tonight in an everlasting kiss. Like, the passion there is 11 on a scale of 1 to 10. Like, that is a dramatic line. And because of the rest of the song, it has the depth to back it up. If it was just that line thrown in with a bunch of other cheesy romantic pop song lyrics, it wouldn't have the punch that it does. I mean, part of the punch comes from how Bruce sings it and the music that's arranged around it, and then, the break and the saxophone solo that comes afterwards. But a lot of it is he's already set the template for the kind of relationship that's going on in this song. And so a line like that, sung with the conviction he sings it, sounds like he 100% means what he says. And I mean, it's a really, really romantic line. Like, let's be real. When you take it out of the, automobile-based, high-octane arrangement that is Born to Run, and you just look at the line of lyrics as it is, of I die, wanna die with you out on the street tonight, in an everlasting kiss, that's a really romantic line. So take that, people who say that Born to Run isn't a love song. Because it 100% is. It's just also a life song and an everything else song, too, but it's definitely a love song. And then you get the break, the deceleration, and the flooring it into the highway's jammed with broken heroes on a last chance power drive. And think about that, like, so many, your other songs out there, almost any other song by any other artist is not going to have their heroes be broken. Like, that's not something you do. You're either a hero or you're broken. Very few songwriters, very few people in their general view of reality put those two together. Where it's like you can be broken, but you can also be the hero at the same time. Because everybody on this screwed up planet is broken. It's just part of what comes from living. You have a bad growing up situation with your parents, or you have a bad relationship, or something is inevitably going to happen that is going to hurt you and will break you, and then you have to put yourself back together again. And you don't have to be perfect to be loved, which is one of the things that Bruce comes back to in other songs later in his career, and it's one of the most wholesome and reassuring things that any musical artist has ever done. Like Racing in the Street. Granted, I heard the Roger Taylor version first, but Racing the Street kind of changed my life because it made me realize you don't have to be perfect to be loved. Which, for a people pleaser with a hypercritical father, was a huge revelation. I'm like, oh. And then I end up finding out, like, my mom's like, yeah, we would still love you even if you weren't a good kid. And I'm like, oh. I've just spent the last half of my life, trying to be perfect so that, I would maintain the status of the good favorite child that I thought I had, which I do. But, long story short, not to get on a personal tangent, but I'm like, Bruce Springsteen is a master at, like, that is such an important theme that so few people really cover with the depth that he does. And it's really disappointing because it's very important. It's, to dig deeply into the relationships in songs and prove out, hey, this person's flawed, and so is the other person, but they're gonna make it work. He's scared. They're broken heroes. And they're still making a run for it. And then, so the next line is, everybody's out on the street to out on the run tonight, but there's no place left to hide. Which, I mean, you can take that as the literal sense of, like, the last chance power drive, desperation to get out of town. But also, which definitely fits in with, like, the whole broken American dream picture that Born to Run is painting. But also, no place left to hide is giving up the posturing from your adolescence and being like, okay, I'm gonna stop hiding behind all this stuff that I have put on me. Because I thought I needed to do that to be what people wanted me to be. There is no place left to hide. The only person you can be is yourself. So stop wasting your time trying to be somebody else, because there is no place left to hide. Especially once you realize that. You're like, okay, once you come to the realization you can only be you, then you're like, okay, well, now I have to work on being me rather than trying to be something else. So there is no place left to hide. And then, yet again, back to Wendy and the romance. You get together, Wendy, we can live with the sadness, and I'll love you with all the madness in my soul. Like, yet again, holy cow, That is some passionate love declaration there. And yet again, it's counterpoising like the happiness that they're running towards, with the dreams, the things that they want out of life, with the fact that they can live with the sadness. Like, life will suck. It will not always be pretty. He's not even promising it will be pretty at the beginning. But he is promising that they will do it together, and they will face the sadness together, and that he will love her. And it's not with all the perfect perfection of his soul. It's with all the madness of his soul. It's like, going back to the broken heroes with all the, he's broken, but he is still gonna love this chick with like every ounce he's got. Especially, you get that vibe with how he sings it and the arrangement of the song and then the lyrics. It's like all three parts of this song are put together so perfectly that it's why it's one of the greatest songs of all time. And I consider it the greatest song of all time, and possibly the greatest love song of all time, because of lines like that. It's not just, I love you and let's go to the hop. It is, I love you and life sucks, but we will go through it together, and I ain't going anywhere. Because I've already faced the reality that life sucks, so I'm not expecting this to be perfect. I just like you enough to spend the rest of my life with you. Which is pretty intense and awesome and admirable and enviable and epic. And then you get, the closing lines out with, someday, girl, I don't know when, we're gonna get to that place where we really wanna go and we'll walk in the sun. But till then, tramps like us, baby, we're born to run. And so, he knows, hey, life isn't perfect. Life probably will never be perfect, but we're gonna keep trying to make it as perfect as we can get it, as happy as we can make it while we're on the road together. And, whether the place in the sun is a actual place or just, the contentment of, okay, we're happy in who we are and what we are together as a relationship. And that's enough. That is the contentment the place in the sun we were looking for. Or if it's even more like metaphorical, metaphysical, whatever, where it's, talking about just, dying and going to the hereafter after living through a life filled with sadness, madness, and, broken heroes. And then, you close out with, the continuing, the perseverance, the struggle. The struggle will continue. Tramps like us were born to run. Where they're running to, they're not quite sure, but they're gonna keep going and trying to find the best life that they can with their broken hero selves in a broken America. With the runaway American dream. Like, their view of their country is broken. They're broken. They know this. They know that their world isn't the perfect painting of the, World War II upbeat songs by the big band, era artists. It's not bubblegum like the 50s or early 60s. And it's not running off into drug culture like the latter 60s and early 70s. It's life acknowledging personal flaws and the flaws of the world and still persevering and finding the guts and the will to survive, to, quote the Ramones, to keep going and to keep running towards, the life that you want in spite of struggles, in spite of disappointments, in spite of, getting knocked up out of high school, getting married, and spending the rest of your adult life working at Kmart, like Bruce's, sister, who was only like 2 years younger than him. Virginia got knocked up, had a shotgun wedding essentially, and started working at Kmart, and pretty much did for like her, career. It's not glamorous. It's not fancy. It's not pretty, And the song "The River" is about Virginia and her husband. So like. Yet again, Born to Run bridges the gap and starts discussing those adult issues that Bruce will spend the rest of his musical career discussing. The questions that really matter, not just, you know, who should I, you know, take to the prom? It's like, no, how should I live my life? And what's really important at the end of the day? You know, the things that good art makes you reflect on and inspires you to examine your own life. And Born to Run does that. When you break down all those lyrics and you look at them, you're like, this is inspiring. This is causing me to have introspection. And this is a dang good rock and roll song that's gonna blast you off your ass. Which just makes it all the things that make a great song rolled into one. Now, y'all rock and rollers can roll on down through the rest of the week, because this ramble is done and Rosie out. But before I do, let me just say my usual of be kind to each other and rock on. And baby, tramps like us, we were born to run.